Today is Wednesday, June 5th. This is the Women's Mishnah or Gemara share. The Wednesday before Shavuot. So I wanted to talk about making cheese on Yom Tov to enable you to eat cheesecake on Yom Tov. Okay. So what I'd like to do tonight is focus on some of the parameters of Ochel Nefesh, that which we are allowed to do on Yom Tov as opposed to Shabbos, and how it impacts making cheese on Shavuos, so that you can eat cheesecake, fresh cheesecake, having just made fresh cheese.
Really fresh.
Yeah, real fresh cheesecake. So if you turn to page number 1 on the back of the page, it says, in source Aleph, this is a pasuk in Parshat Bo, Torah writes, Ubayom Harishon, this is talking about the Yontov of Pesach, Ubayom Harishon Mikra Kodesh, first day is a day of proclaimed holiness, Ubayom HaShvi'i Mikra Kodesh Yilachem, Kol Milacha Lo Ye'aseh Bahem, all Milacha may not be done on the first and seventh days of Pesach. Ach, however, Asher Ye'ochel L'chol Nefesh, Hu livado yeyaseh lachem. Whatever you must do for ochel nefesh, for feeding the soul, that's what it literally means. Doesn't mean feeding the soul, means feeding the body. Feeding the body, hu livado yeyaseh lachem. That alone can be done on Yom Tov. So that is the critical operative phrase for a Yom Tov. Ochel nefesh, ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh, that which can be eaten for all people. Right? As always, the Torah never defines its terms. Torah doesn't tell you what the word melacha means. Torah doesn't tell you what the word matzah means. So the Torah doesn't define. So Torah Shebaal Peh is now faced with that task of defining the terminology itself. So, there is a Gemara in Masechet Beitza, in source Bet, where the Gemara tells us, in explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah makes a statement in Masechet Beitza, that an egg that is laid on Yom Tov, one is not permitted to eat it on Yom Tov. An egg that is laid on Yom Tov may not be consumed on Yom Tov. And there are four opinions in the Gemara as to why you are not permitted to eat an egg laid on Yom Tov. After all, why shouldn't you be able to eat the egg? What's wrong with it?
No.
Okay, that's answer number one. That's correct. When we learned Beitza, we did. That's correct. So on Daf Gimel, the Gemara offers its third explanation in the name of Rabbi Yosef, and says, top of the page, Rabbi Yosef Omar Gzeira Mishum Peiros Hanoshlin. The reason why you are not permitted to eat an egg that is laid on Yom Tov is out of concern that you might eat a fruit that fell off a tree. Gzeira mishum peiros hanoshrin. What does that mean? The Gemara, Rabbi Yosef in his image, an egg coming out of a chicken looks like it's being pulled off, pulled out of the chicken. That's the imagery that he had in his mind. Don't forget, Rabbi Yosef was blind. So... he imagined things quite often. And that was his imagery. And hence, since that's the image he has of an egg being laid by a chicken, it reminded him of a fruit being plucked, that's being plucked from a tree. So the egg that comes off, that comes out of the chicken, is like an apple that fell from a tree. Fell from a tree.
Could it be like a change in status?
Well, that's the nolad issue. That's the first answer. Right. So, therefore, The halacha is that any fruit that falls off a tree on Yom Tov or Shabbat, you are not permitted to eat that fruit. Why? Gzeira shema yale v'yitlosh. We are concerned that you might go ahead and like that fruit so much, and then you will pull another one off. So that's the gzeira in relationship to a fruit that fell. Since in Rabbi Yosef's mind, an egg falling off a chicken, coming out of a chicken, looks like this apple that fell off a tree, therefore you are not permitted to eat that particular egg, because if you eat that egg, you'll eat an apple that fell, and then what will you do? You'll pluck the apple. Fine. That's what the Gemara says. Whether it makes a whole lot of sense or not is not my concern tonight. Not my concern. My concern is, on Yom Tov, why can't you pluck another apple off the tree? I can understand legislating that on Shabbat you should not eat an apple that fell off a tree. And by extension, according to Rabbi Yosef, you should not eat an egg that was laid. I understand it. Because there is never a justification for plucking an apple off a tree. But on Yom Tov, on Shabbos, but on Yom Tov, why should the Gemara prohibit plucking an apple off a tree? After all, I just read the pasuk. Ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh, hu livado ye'aseh lachem. Whatever is considered consumable by man. Apples are considered consumable. So, hu livado, that alone can be done. That's Tosis's question.
I thought it was breaking the branch.
No, that's something else. Shemayalavi, that's something else. That's why you're not allowed to ride a horse.
Right.
Are we riding horses?
No, I thought that had to do with this also.
No.
You pulled it.
No, nothing to do with pulling the branch. It's plucking the fruit is the issue. Yeah. So, asks Tosfos on source Gimel. Ach tema. Es is bamir avunder. I am perplexed. My shemo ya'alevi yitlosh. What does the Gemara say that perhaps you will pluck an apple off the tree? Therefore, you can't eat an apple that fell off the tree. Ha'afilu lichatchila mutar litlosh. Even initially, you should be permitted to what? To rip the apple. Why? The ha'ochel nefesh. Because it sounds like a classic case of ochel nefesh. Just read the pasuk. Ochel nefesh. What could be more ochel nefesh than having an apple? I could think of something else, but then...
You'll start pruning the tree. Like,
what?
Maybe you'll start doing it for...
Okay, maybe, but the Gemara doesn't say that.
Yeah.
The Gemara says the concern is that you're going to rip the fruit off the tree.
Is the assumption that you're going to necessarily eat it?
Okay, does it, so let me ask you this. When you cook something for Yantiv, does it mean you eat it right there and then?
No, but you're not cooking yourself for after Yantiv.
I didn't say for after Yantiv.
No, that's what she's saying.
So then you're never allowed to cook, do any malacha on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov.
No, I know, I'm saying this, when you're talking about the fruit.
I'm talking about because I'm standing. I
want to
eat it. On Yom Tov, of course. Of course, that's understood. 100%.
Okay.
Because no milacha can be done on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. What happens if you do? It's a machloikis. Some say you get lashes. Others say you don't get lashes, but it's asur midrabbanan anyhow. But
I didn't have any regret. That's not an issue either.
No, that doesn't. No, let's focus on the issue, not the other cases. So Tosafot answers. I bracketed Tosafot's answer, where he cites a Rabbeinu Nisanel Al Kain Piresh Rabbeinu Sanel from Kinun. The Yerushalmi Yesh. The Yerushalmi, the Palestinian Talmud provides the answer. So before I show it to you inside, I want you to go back to Source Aleph and look at Pasuk Yud Zayin for a minute. Pasuk Yud Zayin. What is Pasuk Yud Zayin talking about?
Matzah.
Correct. What aspect of the mitzvah of matzah?
Harvesting,
watching. No. It says, Ushmartem et ha-matzot. What do you think that means? Ushmar, shmira, shimur of matzah. Guarding it. For what? How do you guard it? Making sure that it doesn't, exactly, that it doesn't rise. In other words, there is a mitzvah of the Torah, not just haphazardly to bake a piece of matzah. It means that I'm standing there taking every single precaution to make sure that this piece of dough does not become chametz. And we do that, if you ever saw the baking of matzos, they take every single precaution. They're constantly kneading the dough. They don't let it just rise. They clean out every morsel of chametz from the previous baking. That's called shimur of matzah. Now, at what stage of the matzah does a piece of matzah have to be shomur? And even most importantly, not to come in the flour should not come in contact with water. At what stage? That's correct. The Yerushalmi is of the opinion it is only Misha'as Lisha. Only from the time of kneading the dough. That's the only time you have to be super careful. All of the matzos that you eat, there's a thing on the box, it says, Shimura Mishat Ketzira, from the time it was harvested. That's the opinion in the Bavli. However, the Yerushalmi says, you only need Mishas Lisha, from kneading. That's much later in the bread making stage than cutting it, harvesting. Harvesting is number 3 on the list of 11 melachot that are required in order to engage in the bread making process. There are 11 melachot. Number 3 is harvesting. Lisha is number 10. Number 10. So from number 10 onward, you must engage in shimur l'shem matzah. So the Yerushalmi believes that the reason why Pasuk Tet Zayin and Pasuk Yud Zayin follow one another is that you should apply the same standard by Ochel Nefesh as you do by Shimur of Matzah. How do you define the word Ochel Nefesh? So it could be done very, very loosely. Very loosely. I could say, you know what? I can grind on Yom Tov. I can harvest on Yom Tov. I can mill on Yom Tov. I can stomp on the grain, you know, mirakeh, to separate. I can do separating, borer, everything. Says the Yerushalmi, no. Of the bread-making process, the ochel nefesh of bread, only 2 of the processes are allowed to be done on Yom Tov. Lisha and Afia. Lisha and Afia. How do I know? Because that is the standard that applies in relationship to Shimur of Matzah. Shimur of Matzah happens to be only, according to the Yerushalmi, only Melisha Ve'elech. I think I once told you that in 1989 I went to Russia with a group of students before the fall of the Iron Curtain and went to the Leningrad Synagogue, and there are literally 50,000 boxes of matzahs already baked there in January, and there is a line around the block of Russian Jews coming to pick up matzah for Pesach in January. And every time the Lubavitcher Chassid tells them, you cannot be mekayim the mitzvah of matzah with these matzos. They're kosher for Pesach, but you cannot be mekayim the mitzvah. I asked them, why are you saying that? He said, because it's not Shmura Mishas Ktsira. So I asked him, "Are you think these Jews are coming back? Are you going to distribute Shmura Matzah Mishas Ksir before Pesach?" He said, "Of course not." So why are you telling these people when you have a Yerushalmi And many Rishonim paskin like the Yerushalmi, and that you're allowed to do it Mishas Lisha. What's the downside of letting them think we can be Mikayim the mitzvah simply because it's Shmur Mishas Lisha? He didn't have much to answer, but I was surprised. Yeah, to every guy. Can't be Mikayim the mitzvah matzah with this matzah. So why else would these people come to get the matzah? Anyhow, that's Yerushalmi's opinion. So according to Tosfot, the name of the Yerushalmi, only two milachot of the bread-making process are permitted on Yom Tov. So therefore, tell me why the Gemara says you can't pluck an apple on Yom Tov. Why can't you pluck an apple? Because it's much too early in the process.
We don't know how the process correlates for each thing.
No, we know what the process is for everything. You plant, you plow, you plant, you harvest.
Yeah, but preparing matzah is different than preparing.
No, it needs more. It needs more. Right. A fruit only needs three processes. That's it. Once
so
you pluck it,
how do you know where?
Makes no difference.
Okay.
Of the bread making process,
you can't do.
That's it.
Okay.
All harvesting is prohibited.
You can
chef. That's a different. Good. Well, good. We're not going to talk about the tongue, but it's an excellent question. You can't shecht. And the answer is, we know that you're allowed to shecht because the Torah tells you to do what?
Carbonate.
But bringing carbon up in the Beit HaMikdash is not a proof because you're allowed to shecht in the Beit HaMikdash for Shabbos. So how do I know? Because the Torah tells us to bring korbanot on Yom Tov. Which korban are we supposed to bring on Yom Tov? Shalmei Chagiga. A korban shlomim in honor of the Chag. So if the Torah tells us, obviously it's got to be permissible. So it's one of the exceptions to the rule. Good. That's what Tosfos says. Now, the Rambam has a different definition of the word Ochel Nefesh. A far more expansive definition and only limited by one idea of a rabbinic nature. Rambam believes, and then we'll read it inside first, I'm going to tell it to you. The Rambam believes, anything that handles food, anything that handles food is defined by definition as a melechet ochel nefesh. Anything that handles food. So I ask you, are you allowed to plant on Yom Tov?
It sounds like it.
No, tell me why you can't.
Oh, because that's not food yet.
It's not food, it's a seed. It's not the food. So you can't plow on Yom Tov? You can't plant, even if it was magically possible to plant and something will grow on that very same day. On that very same day, a grain or a tree is going to grow. Still can't do it because it's not food. So where do we start in the bread making process by handling something that is defined as a food? Where? Harvesting. When you cut the grain, when you cut the fruit. That midda oraisa is all permissible.
Raw wheat,
because I will now bake it. Anything that it's called a food, even though it's a raw food, but it's food. That's what the grain is, raw food. Now you do the next process on Yom Tov. You thresh, you sift, you whatever have to do. You grind, do whatever you want on Yom Tov on a d'oraita level. Now the Rambam introduces a derabanan caveat. Look at the Rambam on in source Dalad. Halacha hey. And in fact, you are the ones who will determine how the Rambam applies his halacha. You, not me. Mrs. Rambam is the one who told him what to do. Says the Rambam, kol milacha she'efshar lehe'asot me'erev Yom Tov v'lo yihye ba hefseid v'lo chisaron im na'aseit mi'ba'erev asru chachamim la'asot ota b'Yom Tov ach al pi shehi l'tzorech achila. Any activity which had it been done on Erev Yom Tov, what will not result by the fact that you did an error? What will not result? A decrease in the quality of the food. If there is no decrease in the quality of the food, had I done it on Erev Yom Tov, then, says Rambam, the rabbis prohibited that activity. If doing that activity on Erev Yom Tov would decrease the quality of the product, the rabbis did not impose their prohibition, and therefore it is automatically permissible based on Torah law. This is what the Rambam says.
That's so subjective.
Of course it is subjective. 100% it's subjective. And in fact, the Ravid, the Rambam will later say, I do not allow plucking fruit on Yom Tov. Because if you pluck them the day before, ishkeferlach, it's not going to what? Taste any worse than if you plucked it. Okay, so Mr. Ravid says, hey Rambam, you're dead wrong. Eating a freshly plucked fruit tastes better than plucking it a day or two ago. So the Ravid says, if that's the case, it's all up. It's very subjective. And I disagree with you. My wife told me that it's different. Okay, so the Ravid says you're allowed to pluck fruit. Rambam says you can't. But according to the Rambam, again, the criteria is whether or not the quality would disappear. Or be reduced. So now, let's talk about grain for a minute. I might go along with Rambam and say that cutting grain, it's not like a fruit, there's not much difference in the quality of the grain, cutting it on Yom Tov versus cutting it Erev Yom Tov. I don't think so. And the same thing the Rambam says about grinding grain into flour. I, Mrs. Rambam, say there is no difference in the quality of the flour if it is ground yesterday or ground today. But Mrs. Rambam told me that grinding spices is permissible on Yom Tov because freshly ground spices are stronger. So you're absolutely correct, doctor, that this is very, very subjective. And the Rambam was listening to his wife, oh, this is... Okay, fine. No problem. So...
But once you're allowed to grind spices, then you can grind anything.
No, you can't. Because Rambam will apply his mitoich principle only in two cases. I know what you're referring to. It's a good question. I'll get to it in a second. So according to the Rambam, we have, on the one hand, a much broader category of what defines ochel nefesh. On a d'oraita level, here is the definition. Anything that handles food is a melechet ochel nefesh according to the Torah. Melechet ochel nefesh. Anything, then the Rabbanan, limited. And even within the same melacha, it depends what you're applying that melacha to. The grinding is the perfect illustration. Grinding spices, Rambam says, is okay. Grinding grain is not okay. It's not okay. And Rambam, according to Mrs. Rambam, no plucking of fruit on Yontif, even though Ravid said, my wife told me, no, freshly plucked fruit tastes a lot better than yesterday's plucked fruit. So it's very subjective, hard to properly define. Yes?
So before refrigeration.
What? That is correct. That's also correct. 100%. No doubt.
One word is bothering. What is lehe aso as opposed to la'aso?
What does that mean?
Yeah. Which could have been done.
It's passive.
Right, it's passive. Yeah. Anything that could have been done on Erev Yom Tov and not decrease the quality of the product. Yeah. Yeah. Now, where did the Rambam get this idea about, you know, changing the quality? Where did he get that idea? Did he make it up? Is that his own? So what the Rambam did is he borrowed something which is not from this topic, but it's related to it. And they are called Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Masa machshirin. How would you translate the word machshirin? That's okay. It's a preparatory stage, something that enables you to engage in ochel nefesh, in a melacha. It's not a melechas ochel nefesh by definition, but it's necessary to enable. I'll give you the classic example. Correct. That's the case. Sharpening knives. I will not sharpen a dull knife on Yom Tov. So the Gemara has the rule. If the milacha could have been done on Erev Yom Tov, we do not allow you to do it on Yom Tov.
Certainly the knife doesn't get worse when it's sharp if you don't use it.
But if it could have been done on Erev Yom Tov, so if you have a knife that's already pretty dull, and you wait until Yom Tov to do it, to sharpen it, we're going to say you can't sharpen it. Why? Because it could have been done Erev Yom Tov. But if the knife was sharp, and then for some reason it got chipped on Yom Tov itself, you were cutting something, and it hit something, and it got chipped, you're allowed to sharpen it on Yom Tov. So the Rambam borrows this idea, which the Gemara only applied to Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, and the Rambam now applies it to Ochel Nefesh itself. And we now weigh each Meleches Ochel Nefesh, whether or not it could have been done before Yom Tov or not. Before Yom Tov or not. That is Shitas HaRambam. So this is number one, a machloikis between Tosfos and the Rambam. How to define Ochel Nefesh.
Does this apply to everything, even like the usual stuff that you're allowed to do, like cooking? Because a lot of times we kind of like say, oh, at least we can cook on Yom Tov, so I won't make that ahead of time.
Good. So Mrs. Rambam,
everything can
Mrs. Rambam had said that if you cook something yesterday, Erev Yom Tov, it's not going to taste as good as cooking it on Yom Tov itself.
Right,
but even without the fish.
What if we feel like it could taste as good?
That, okay, so then the choice is you. Okay,
so
it has not. No code has decided to change the halacha, but based on what you're saying, somebody today who wanted to revamp Hilchos Yom Tov could have made a case that with refrigeration and stuff like that and freezing and things like that, we should do everything on Erev Yom Tov as much as we possibly can to minimize. And what's the reason why the rabbis said if it wouldn't taste good? Because they don't want you to be in the kitchen a whole Yom Tov. That's exactly why the... That's precisely the reason. That's why they said if it could have been done on Erev Yom Tov, don't do it on Yom Tov. I don't want you in the kitchen all day working like a slave. That's not the goal and the objective of working on Yom Tov. It's Yom Tov is to enjoy, to come to shul, to daven, to learn, to be with your family, not to be a slave in the kitchen. That's exactly precisely the reason. Precisely the reason. Sure.
If it wasn't something specific that happened in your example, but you just discover that it's not sharp, then you're saying you wouldn't be able to sharpen it.
No, if you did, right. If you did not know, if you had not used this knife in a while, now you take it out and it's not, you're allowed to sharpen it. Yes. Only if you knew it was not, the last couple of days, weeks, and then I forgot to do it. Now the rabbis will say, too bad, can't do it. Can't
you?
It's something like it. Something like it, yes. Yes, yes. That is correct. That is correct. Yes. Yeah. Now, take a look at page number 2, source Hay, a Gemara in Shabbos, to get down to our issue about making cheese. How does one go about making cheese? You milk the cow. And now you have this bucket of milk, and you throw rennet into the big bucket, which is the maw of a cow, the lining of a stomach of a cow. You throw it in, and it begins to curdle, That's what happens. So the Gemara will ask the question, can you make fresh cheese on Yontif? So just based on your own knowledge of what we said thus far, tell me, should it be permissible or should it not be permissible?
Yes, permissible.
Based on what?
Cheese is definitely going to be better if you have it fresh.
Okay.
It's machshire, although you're doing the things that you need in order to make it.
Good.
And it's food.
And it's food, good. Now, what melacha would you say is the issue of making cheese? What melacha are you touching upon by making cheese? Because everyone will say you're not allowed to make cheese on Shabbos. So what melacha would you now identify it as?
If you're changing one thing into another.
Cooking?
That's a good one. That's a good one. Changing the state. But that's only a din derabanan.
Yeah.
What is the d'oraisa? It's not something that we would think of, you know, just by our intuition. It's not at all intuitive.
It's not separating.
No. It's building. Bona.
Wow.
Where you take something and coagulates into something solid, it's like taking little pieces when it starts to curdle, and then it forms together. The Gemara calls it bona.
Is that like making ice also?
It might be. Might be, yes.
I was thinking egg whites.
Like what? I'm not saying a foam.
It's going from a liquid to a solid.
Here it's right. It's built exactly going from the liquid into the solids, uh-huh. Collecting the item. Yes.
I think there is liquid that's not included in that.
That is correct. That's called nisyuve chalav. The Gemara knows about that and asks, is that halachically, that little liquid, is that still considered milk? The Gemara wants to know that from a kashrut point of view. So the Gemara is fully aware of exactly what you said. It doesn't pertain our discussion here. But the Gemara, where the Gemara talks about nisyuve chalav, the little liquid that's remaining after it coagulates, there's still a little liquid, is that halachically water or is that milk? Is it halachically called milk? Okay. Yeah. Okay, that might be an issue. It might be. Yeah. So, let's see how the Gemara raises the question. It's a Gemara in Shabbos, source hay, second line, I bracketed, Amale Abaye le Rabbi Yosef.
Is our friend Rabbi Yosef?
Our friend Rabbi Yosef, yes. Yes. Rabbi Yosef is a major Talmudic player. And he was engaged in a major debate as to who would become the Rosh HaYeshiva of one of the major academies in Babylonia. I'm not sure if it was Sura or Pumbedisa, one of the two. And he was pitted against Rabbah Bar Nachmeni. Rabbah, famous Rabbah, ran against Yav Yosef for the position of Rosh HaYeshiva. And each one had a strength that the other one did not have. Rabbi Yosef was called Sinai. He remembered everything. Everything he remembered, right? He couldn't see and he remembered everything. But he wasn't that analytical. He just remembered the halacha from the halacha this month. Rabbah was nicknamed the Oker Harim. The one who moves mountains with his svara, with his penetrating analysis. He did not know nearly as much as Rabbi Yosef did, but he knew how to dissect a sugya and analyze and question and come up with criteria. And they were debating which one is the most appropriate Rosh Yeshiva. And they took Rabbi Yosef.
Really?
Yeah. It's very much.
How did he learn without Braille in those days?
What? He just listened.
He just listened to his. Was he blind from birth?
I don't remember if he was blind from birth or not. I don't know. I know. In our generation, we are so much into creativity and analysis, and we're a thinker. Just because he had a photographic memory, obviously, because he couldn't see, couldn't learn inside.
Because he can't see, so it'd have to be.
No, it's a photographic memory, because he remembers everything.
Visualization.
Right. It's auditory, whatever it is, but he remembered everything. It's very much akin to the way certain people achieve their greatness. Ovadi Yosef was probably the greatest big baki in many hundreds of years. There is nothing that he didn't remember. Nothing that he didn't remember. In fact, people used to think, if you read his tshuvot, it's just, there's no analysis, just citation after citation. This one says it's mutter, this one says asr, and he comes to a consensus. Fine, this is his opinion, I think this is the halacha. Always fired him against Ashkenazim, so he always said, fine. So people used to think that this guy can't know all of this. It's impossible. And he's got a committee of people looking things up. This is before Bar Ilan, obviously. And he's got a committee looking these things up, and then he just writes it down, all the sources they quote. So my brother told me that he once had a radio program, and that immediately before him, Ovadia Yosef was on this radio program also. So in the studio all the time. And he had questions, people called him in, and he answered on the spot, and that became the basis of his first set of tshuvot, his most famous one called Yechavadas. He had no committees. He answered the question on the spot, on the radio, without opening up a book. He came to YU once, and he can't get a shir. Dr. Belkin and the Rav came into the shir, and it was standing for an hour at the door. Who's going to walk in first? The Rav and Dr. said, "You're the guest. You're the Rav Rashi. You come in. No, you're Rosh Hashiva. You're the Rav." For 2 hours, standing at the door. Who's going to walk in first? But anyhow, he comes in the shir, doesn't open up a book, doesn't open up anything. He's a shir for an hour and a half, just rattling source after source after source and so on. But not a word of analysis, not one word. So I went to the apartment, back to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said, "What do you think of this thing?" Superficial Bikias. Superficial Bikias. He knows a lot. I didn't hear one word of analysis. What's the core of the Machlekes? You know? But anyhow. So that was it. So Rabbi Yosef, he became the Rosh Yeshiva because of his outstanding Bikiyut. So Abaye asked Rabbi Yosef, Mahu ligabein. Gibun is the term for making cheese. Givina ligabein. It's the verb form of making cheese. Mahu ligabein. Amale asur. It is prohibited. He asked them then, Maishna melisha. Why should making cheese be any different than what? Kneading a dough? What difference does it make? What do you do when you make a dough? You have loose flour, and you add water, and now what does it become? A dough becomes a solid substance. Well, that's the same thing that happens with cheese. You have the liquid, you throw the rennet in, and what starts happening? It starts curdling up. Why should it be prohibited? Answered Rabbi Yosef, Amale, Hasam lo efshar. Hacha efshar. Translate that, ladies and ladies. There, what could have been done? You can make cheese before Yontif and nothing's going to happen to it. Efshar, perfectly okay. But, hacha lo efshar. You want to have a fresh cake, a fresh challah? You can't put the dough, you can't make the dough yesterday for what? A fresh challah today. Therefore, therein lies the distinction between cheese and lisha.
Not according to what we just said.
What?
Not according to what we just said, because the cheese surely tastes better if you make it on the spot.
Okay, that's what the Gemara asks. For ha amri nadoi gvina basyoma ma'alya, had not the people from Nahardoi said, cheese of that day, bas yoma, that particular day, me'alya, maza me'alya, it's great, fantastic, superior. Answers the Gemara Hachi Ka'amar, afilu givina bas yoma me'alya. Even if, what, you have cheese one day old, that also tastes great. It's not the way he appeared in the sentence, but they're redoing it to fit their particular perspective. Fine.
We're now about soft cheeses here.
Presumably. Yeah, like cottage cheese. Yeah, that's correct. Because the harder cheeses needed had to be aged much more time. Yeah. Talking about softer cheeses, which could be made and used on Yom Tov, of course. Good point.
Why is it kneading bone then?
What?
Kneading should be bone also. Then.
Okay, that's a good question. That's a very good question. But it's not. It's just not. So take a look at the Rambam in Source Vav. Take a look at Rambam in Source Vav. Ein osin givina b'yom tov. You're not permitted to make cheese on Yom Tov. Now, according to Rambam's definition, should it have been permissible or not? Should making cheese on Yom Tov based on the definition of Ochel Nefesh?
Yes.
Why? No. Because it's Ochel Nefesh. What am I doing? I'm making food. And if you handle food, midoraisa, it's mutter. What would Tosfos say to this question? Are you allowed to make cheese on Yom Tov? Unless you want to really, why would it? Because it's not Lisha or Afia, it's Bona. But maybe Tosis would say, why do you want to call it Bona? Call it exactly what you called. What do you call cheese? Lisha. It's not really kneading the dough, but it's very similar to kneading the dough. And even Tosfot says kneading a dough is perfectly permissible on Yom Tov. Everyone says that. But according to the Rambam, it's zero concern because it handles the food. So what do you think the Rambam's going to have to come to? What's going to determine the Rambam's perspective?
Well, that tastes better.
Correct. So what did Mrs. Rambam tell him?
Nope!
Mrs. Rambam said, don't make it that day. Take a look at the Rambam. In Halacha Vav. Ein osin givina b'yom tov. You are not permitted to make cheese on Yom Tov. Why? She'im gibein me'erev Yom Tov ein bazeh chisaron ta'am. Because if you made the cheese on Erev Yom Tov, it seems to me that what? No, it's not. There is no chisaron, no taste that's missing. It tastes just as good on whether it's made on Erev. Therefore, midirabanan, you can't make it on Yom Tov. Midoraisa, it's 100% permissible. And even if the Rambam were to define it as boneh, which the Gemara, there is a Gemara that does, and I'll show you how the Gemara gets, how this comes to that, and the crazy conclusion that, according to Tosfos, that it, no matter what you define it as, according to the Rambam, since it handles the food, it's automatically permissible. Automatically permissible. On a d'oraita level. That's the Rambam Shita. And everything hinges on a practical level what Mrs. Rambam would say in terms of, will it not or not? And again, that is so subjective, and the question would be, what happens if our Mrs. Rambam would say, I disagree with that, Mrs. Rambam. I think this tastes better. I think the plucked fruit tastes better when it's fresh, like Mrs. Rivid told Mr. Rivid.
Well,
What?
Anyway, but the question I have.
Yes, there are some.
Is you're going by what the Rambam says, and you think something tastes better, but someone else is coming to eat at your house, granted, and they think the cheese tastes just as good. So, aren't you like you're over the?
No. That's a different issue. Your question is a good one. What happens if a guest has different standards than you do?
Well, in terms of this, since it's so subjective.
Okay, right. But there's even more serious issues
right.
about, you know, who you paskin like, you know, whether this is from...
Right.
So that's a question for the guest. How should a guest conduct him or herself when they know that their host is not necessarily abiding by standards which they themselves abide by? So I'll give you one of the classic illustrations on Pesach. You're invited to somebody's house and they eat kidney oat. Are you the Ashkenazi are you allowed to eat kidney oat? So of course the answer is a machloikis. But Avadi Yosef is very makel in that regard.
What?
Yes.
But he's Sephardic.
No, not necessarily. They made something for you. You are the guest and you have a right under those circumstances. Don't forget, you're not eating tarfus on Pesach. Right, exactly. You're not eating tarfus. You're not eating chametz. Exactly, you're not.
Okay, you're invited, you hold shmer matzah, and you go to somebody who uses regular matzah, you're saying that that meal you could eat with their service?
Of course. According, why not? Are you eating chametz? Are you? So don't come. That's your prerogative. Okay, the gebrach. That's their prerogative to say I won't come. But I'm saying if the person knows I don't eat gebrachs, you eat gebrachs, and now you invite me, so it's my decision. If I come, halachically, I have a right to eat the gebrachs now. Even though tomorrow morning when I go to my house, I'm not going to eat. You're allowed to, according to many authorities. Others say, no, you have to inquire from your host. What standards do you have? I only eat shmur matzah. There, you're going to serve me shmur matzah? Okay. So you'll have to have, even though it's not the night of Pesach, you'll have to provide shmur matzah. We all have sons-in-law, things like that, who will only eat shmura all yontiv. So, right? So that I don't eat shmura all yontiv, but my son, one of my sons-in-law does. So you got to buy an extra 10 pounds of matzah shmura for $25 a pound. That's correct. They don't eat shmishin shmura. That's correct. If they, that is also correct, right? Yeah. Right. Hotels generally accommodate people. Yes. But not every hotel will serve gebrachts and non gebrachts.
No.
They will not. Because the gebrachts, people don't eat gebrachts, so there's going to be a problem in the kitchen then. Right. So there are all of these issues. So some paskin that under those, if it's not dealing with machalot asurot, if it's not dealing with machalos asuros, somebody once asked me that they were invited for Shabbos and they see the host taking something out from the refrigerator and putting it, no, not worse than on a blech. On a blech is not a problem. Putting it, people, yeah, like a hot plate, or yeah, maybe a blech or something like that. And according to the Ramah, which we follow, it has to be on the blech at least Friday night, Bein Hashmashot, then you can put it in the refrigerator. And they had no idea if this woman knew about that halacha or not. So I said, you know what? Ovadi Yosef's opinion is that the blech is considered such a heker, it is so distinguishable from cooking that no one would ever accuse you of cooking something on Shabbos by putting something on a blech. So he does not require that intermediary step, that it be on the blech, bein hashmashot, when you light candles, then you put it in the fridge and return it. He doesn't require that. It can be in the fridge all day, all night, taken straight out and put it on the blech. So I said, Avad Yosef has big enough shoulders, you could eat it. You could eat it. So unless the people are serving tarfus, under those circumstances, you can't. Then you have to decline the invitation. I also had a family that was, you know, not terribly careful about Chilul Shabbos, at least according to many neighbors' reports. They claimed they kept kosher, and they invited some of the neighbors, our members. These people were members of the shul. And they asked me, can I eat there? I said, if you will tell me that you have evidence that they're not Shomrei Shabbat, unfortunately you cannot eat in their house. Again, it's a serious halachic issue. People were furious, of course, they quit the shul. But if you're dealing with chumras, like gebracht and kitniot and things like that, which are all chumras upon chumras, under those circumstances, some say that if you're in someone's house, you are permitted to eat. Yeah. So, yeah. Others say it's the bird. That's a different perspective. So here. So the same thing would be true, Tova, about the Rambam. If this guest says, you know what, I believe the cheese tastes better only if it's made on Yontif. And that's it. So now your guest says, I'm sorry, I follow the Rambam. So then the guest has a choice. Either to turn down the invitation, or according to others, okay, I'll eat the cheese this Yontif, come back to my house and not eat cheese, not make cheese on Yontif. That's all. You got your choice. You have a choice. Yes, of course.
Horseradish, because that seems to be, I'm learning a lot tonight.
I've always learned a lot.
But anyway, the grating of horseradish, some people say, oh, I want to grate for the second night, for the second Seder, and I, of course, said you can't, but it sounds like you can.
What, to grate the horseradish?
More.
On Yontif?
It sounds like it's going to be stronger.
Why not?
Because I didn't think you can.
Tell me why not, based on what we did tonight.
Tonight is...
Okay, that's a different... Can you use the greater is a different issue.
Okay, so
that's not for tonight's discussion.
That sounds like spice is what you're describing. You said you could grind spice.
Correct.
So why is
this... You can grate new chorein on Yontif. No doubt. Because it will taste better fresh as opposed to grating it a day before, no doubt. According to the Rambam, 100% permissible. Yeah?
But you can't do it until nighttime.
Right, that's another thing. It has to be samuch to the meal. That respect. Yes. 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 Now, let me just throw in this thing about the boneh issue. Listen to this. I'm sure you've heard about the famous halacha of mitoich. I told you, it's number one on my list. Mitoich! Of the 150 things you have to know to fool everybody that you're a genius. Number one is mitoich. That once you are allowed to do something for ochel nefesh purposes, you're allowed to do it for anything, even if it's not ochel nefesh related. So the illustration which the Gemara gives is, let's take a case which everybody says is okay. Are you allowed to cook on Yanto for food? Of course. No one says you can't. Can you boil up water to take a shower? Let's not use the shower. To wash your hands. Boil up hot water to wash your hands. That's not eating. The answer is yes. Mitoich. Once you are allowed to cook food, you're allowed to cook water for other purposes as well. You're allowed to havara. You're allowed to have fire for what? To cook. You're allowed to have fire for heat.
So you can actually light a fire in the fireplace?
Midoraisa, you're allowed to. The Rabbanan said don't. Because, same reason. Because it's going to take you 2 hours to rub two sticks
also
together.
Electricity, same thing, because that's H, right?
But that's a whole different ball game. Why electricity is usher. Yeah. Now, good. So now, there is another machloikis. When do we apply the principle of mitaych? When do we apply the principle of mitaych?
Certainly not everything.
So Tosfos' opinion is, whenever you're allowed to do a milah, any activity which is permissible on Yom Tov, the principle of mitaych applies. Any activity which is permissible on Yom Tov, mitaych applies for that as well. Any activity. So, are you allowed to bake silly putty on Yom Tov? Hey, let me make silly putty on Yom Tov.
It's not Yom Tov.
The answer is you're allowed to. Why not? Are you allowed to knead a dough to bake a bread? Of course. So I can knead silly putty for my grandchildren to play. Mutter lechatchil.
But didn't you just say we can't grind the wheat, but we can grind the spices?
That's, yeah, what's the problem?
Once I can grind, means I can
okay.
grind anything.
Okay, so Tosvos, who says that, will claim you can grind anything. But Tosis doesn't say that grinding is mutter. Remember that? Tosis only said lisha and afir. That's why I told you about making silly putty, because it's lisha. Yes.
Isn't it also that if you can do it before Yom Tov, you're not allowed?
No, that's Rambam. That's the Rambam sheet. The Tosis doesn't know that. Tosis doesn't know that. Fine. So now the Gemara asks the following question. If I believe that Megabain is Boner, can I do construction on Yom Tov based on Mitoich? Since I'm allowed... Since I am allowed to do what? Boner to make cheese. Can I do construction on Yom Tov? Tosfos asks that question. And what Tosfos' answer is that Megabain is not the primary expression of Boner. The primary expression of Boner is to what? Is to build a house. So, and that you can't do on Yom Tov. So you only can apply mitaych to the primary expression and then expand it if the primary activity is permissible. So let's take the kneading of the dough. Kneading of the dough is the primary thing for making bread. So now I can make play dough too. But to claim that you're allowed to build because the ancillary activity is permitted because of boner, we don't say mitoich that direction. But conceptually, once you have mitoich, depending on which malacha you apply it to, you could expand it.
Yeah, but with like taking a shower, like cooking is what you're using the heat for.
Good.
The fire. But when you warm up water, the whole purpose is for cleaning, not for...
That's why it's permissible.
Because cleaning is...
Because cleaning is the ancillary. Yeah. The primary malacha of Bishul is for cooking. So boiling up water to take a shower is included in mitoich, 100%. Yes. Yes.
Is there an analysis of why cheese making is considered boner?
No. Yeah, because it does. It's a simple analysis. Because what you're doing is taking, when you build, you take individual particles, individual things, and you knock them together, you attach them. That's what you're doing here. You have the loose curds, and now they become all one, packed in. That's the that's the picture that he's drawn in it. To what? I can't think of too many things. Maybe Jell-O. Yeah, maybe Jell-O might. Jell-O might be something like that. Yeah, yeah. Making Jell-O. It might be. Yeah, might be. Yeah. What?
Is there actually a problem making ice cubes on top?
According to some, there is. The Rav was Makel. Rav was Makel making ice cubes. Yeah.
But
But don't make more.
Because
Shabbos, don't make more than your.
Because there, the reason.
Please, you're making it 4 o'clock. Yeah.
The reason why ice cream is because the water, even though in scientific terminology is separate particles, we don't see water as separate molecules. We look at water as an entity unto itself, and it's just changing state from a liquid into a solid. But it's not building one on top of the other. We don't view ice as, you know, water rather as a separate...
Well, it's really a chemical process.
What?
In other words, like... It's not a chemical process. With the renin, it's an enzyme reaction.
That is correct.
That is also why you're allowed to use renin and why you're allowed to use the cow
skin. Right, that was something else. That was a different issue. Yeah. That's correct. All right, so bottom line, push comes to shove, we do not make cheese on Yom Tov. If you go to the front page, so it says... Eating cheesecake on Shavuos, undoubtedly a mitzvah. Making cheese on Yom Tov.
Is it a mitzvah?
Of course it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat cheese. It's a custom. It's a custom. That's all it is.
Can I make cheesecake, just not the cheese?
Correct. Why can't you make cheese? Because it's probably asur midrabbanan. So it's the three choices. Asur min ha-Torah, asur midrabbanan, mutter. The answer is midoraisa, it's mutter according to the Rambam. Midrabbanan, it's asur midrabbanan. Practically. That's the way we pass it. Tosfos, who limits cheese, who limits it to lisha and afia, Tosfos happens to accept that idea that cheese is not lisha, it's bone. He holds it's asur min ha-Torah. Tosfos. Asur min ha-Torah. Because it's not a malacha that we allow on Yom Tov. But according to the Rambam, who we accept, midoraisa, it's mutter to make cheese on Yom Tov, fresh cheese. Midorabbanan, we don't, because it does not decrease the quality of the product. We'll stop here.